Thank you, especially Michelle, for getting everybody back into their bodies. Okay, because I need you to be in your bodies for this presentation. Although, you know, it was great being on the other side of our brain, but I'm going to just pull you all back in, and we're going to talk about a lot of really practical things. They're all geeks. I love speaking to geeks. I love it. So I'm going to talk to you about a term I like to call chemical consciousness, because that's my company name. My company is named Chem Conscious Inc., and I am a chemical engineer, and I teach people how to use chemicals consciously. So, which sounds like an oxymoron, but really, so let me see if I got the right button here. Nope, that's not it. That one. Okay, so that's me, really, like last week, right? Wasn't I cute? So that was, of course, when I just graduated from Villanova. That might have even been prior to that. That's me in the chemical plant, being a process engineer. I worked for Monsanto, so I have a little trouble saying that, okay? I was still doing good while I worked for Monsanto, and I didn't actually work in the GMO section. I didn't really have anything to do with the agricultural group, but you know, I knew about it. I knew what was going on, and the story back then was, we're doing good for the world. We're feeding millions of people, and that's important. And so, you know, young chemical engineers, we said, cool, we're part of a big thing, you know. So I lasted about 9 years in that plant, but I didn't give up my career. That's me recently. Haven't changed a bit, right? At least I still have the same eyes. You can tell it's me. But that shirt's cool. It says, this girl is a chemical engineer. I love wearing that because I get all kinds of strange looks. But I really am. And I still, you know, last week I was in Houston. I was working in the tallest building in Houston. And I was just doing my thing for a very large client. And this week I get to be here talking to you. So I pretty much keep my industrial business, and I also share what I know with as many people as I can in the community and the general public. So when I talk about chemical plants, I realize that I probably should have a picture, because some people really don't know what they look like, but that's a typical place where I would spend my time. Now, you have to understand that I don't actually work in the chemical plant. Like I keep saying, I work in chemical plants, but I go there as a consultant, and I walk around and I teach people how to comply with the regulations. You know, I look and see if something doesn't look right in the built, you know, in the plant, or if people are being exposed, and I help you know, solve those problems and reduce that risk. There's a nighttime shot, and you can see something doesn't look quite right about that plant. There's definitely something getting out. And what I like to say in the chemical industry is that when I go to a chemical plant, what I help people do is keep the chemicals in the pipes. Okay? Because there is a conscious way to use chemicals. We don't want to give up our you know, our flooring materials and our fire retardants, although they're really not good for us. But, you know, everything has a purpose and a use. And if we gave up chemicals altogether and we eliminated all the chemical plants in the world, there'd be a whole lot of things in our lives that we wouldn't have now. So I don't want to sit up here and talk to you and say chemicals are bad, because they're not bad. It's just that we have to learn how to use them. We have to learn which ones to use and how to protect ourselves while we're still getting the benefit of what we're doing, right? So some of the plants I go to are fun. I actually did work in that plant. No, I walked around in that plant. And there really is a 100,000-gallon tequila storage tank. And it's next to three other ones that are the same size. And one time I showed this picture in a presentation, and somebody asked me, do you think there's a big worm in the bottom of that tank? I really hope not, but you never know, right? You know, and some of the plants I go to are not so much fun. You know, they're dirty and smelly and yucky and, you know, just downright not a pleasant place to be. But keep in mind that there are hundreds and thousands of people that work in facilities like this. And my job originally was to keep those people safe and to help them to understand their exposures and prevent their exposures. But the thing I think about all the time is when we're using products and we're using things that create a demand for the products that are made in plants like this, I also think in the back of my mind that there are people working in these plants. There are people spending their days making these products for us and being exposed more than we are. So that's something to keep in mind when we're talking about all of these chemicals and things that I'm going to tell you about. Okay, so first, before I get into the actual chemicals and everything and try really hard not to scare you, I want to tell you my own story. Okay, because as I said, I was really excited when I got out of Villanova. All right, I was this chemical engineer, so I was going to go work in the world, and I was going to help people, and I was going to do everything right, and I did. You know, to the extent that I could in those plants, I did. But I thought that I was doing something good, and I also did not recognize the effect on my health. Okay, and even though I was protecting people from these exposures and my exposures, I have documented proof that my exposures were extremely low in the chemical plants. Okay, and I can prove that on paper. Yet, look how toxic I was. Now, if I was controlling for 20 some years, if I was controlling that picture there, the fat one, was taken in January of 2012. So if I had spent the first 20-some years of my career keeping my exposures down, why was I so toxic, right? So this is a very good example of what we need Dr. Rita Marie for. Because although I had, at the time that I took that first picture, I had been chemical-free for years, okay? But I was able to detox and get control of the chemicals that were in my body. So I'm going to give you some ideas today about how those chemicals got into my body. And then I'm going to tell you that if you have chemicals in your body and you need to get them out, Dr. Rita Marie is the person to see, because she obviously, as you can see, has saved my life. But I want to point out not just the weight. Okay, and I didn't notice this either. I sent these two pictures to Dr. Rita Marie when I first noticed the comparison, and I said, look at me, and she said, stop looking at your belly and look at your face. Just look at the difference. Look at how much younger you look. I went and got my driver's license renewed, and I just got a new driver's license picture. It was 4 years after the first one, because that's how we do it in Pennsylvania, and the guy looked at it and said, is this you? Like the guy that took my picture said, what is up with that? And I still carry both of those licenses in my wallet, because I look at them every day and remind myself of how far I've come. Okay, so you can't see that very clearly, but there's the progression. I mean, it is definitely me. It's, you know, the same furnishings in most of those pictures and everything. You can see that I pretty much dropped 50 pounds and de-aged in the course of about 11 to 12 months. Okay, so why was I so toxic? And how did I figure out that I needed to get the chemicals out of my body? So one day, when my son was about 4 years old, he's 19 now and he's 6'5", and we love him to death, but he's brought a lot of joy into our life, but he was the catalyst for my change, I guess, my change of heart as far as chemicals. Instead of believing that a little bit isn't going to hurt me, I started to realize that a little bit makes a huge difference. Okay, so I was putting sunscreen on him, and he was a little guy, 4 years old, always running around, always falling and scraping his knees, and so he was crying because I was putting this sunscreen on his legs and it was burning. And he's saying, Mom, stop putting it on my legs, you know, just let me go without it. Now, of course, in those days, I don't know if it's the same now, but you couldn't send a child to daycare without sunscreen on a sunny summer day. If you did, they would put it on him. So it was better if I put it on him before he left. So I started to look at the ingredients. I thought, well, you know, maybe there's alcohol in here. Maybe there's something that would be making him his knees burn. And so when I looked at the label, I did find alcohol, and that probably is what was making his legs burn, but I also found all kinds of other things, like oxybenzone, and I found propylene glycol, which is antifreeze, by the way. Why is it in sunscreen? I'm not sure. But what I noticed was that these very chemicals that were in this bottle of sunscreen were the same things that I was spending my days protecting people from in the plant. And when we're in the chemical plant, we're protecting people down to the parts per billion sometimes parts per million. Okay, so we're not just saying, let's keep the large amounts of chemicals out of your life. We're saying, let's protect you so that in your 8-hour day, you get less than so many parts per billion of this certain chemical. And some of those chemicals that I'm protecting people from were actually in that sunscreen. So I went on this quest. I had to read every label ever. And I went out to the supermarket. I was reading labels of products that I don't even use, and I ran out of the ones in my house. And all I kept finding was just over and over all of these chemicals that, okay, if you think about it, you get a little bit. Maybe you eat a little packet of artificial sweetener and you get a chemical that, you know, the FDA has approved this, so it is safe for me to eat, okay? And maybe that's true, okay? Let's just for a minute assume that if the FDA approved it, that it's safe, okay? But how many of those do you eat every day, right? And how many of those are in products that you eat every day that you don't even know about? And then when it comes to personal care, it's even worse because those chemicals, like there are a lot of things that are safe that have really long, weird names. And there are things that are not so safe that have really long, weird names. And then there are things that are not safe at all that have short, easy to remember names that you would think they were okay for you, but they're really not. Okay, so that's what I learned. And so in that quest, what I did was I got all the chemicals out of my life. I completely changed my life. Now I live in a normal house. I look normal to most people. You know, I didn't change my lifestyle. I didn't go live in a cave somewhere and, you know, eat berries and, you know, I don't even eat berries because they have too much sugar. But the point is that I can still live a normal life and I don't use these chemicals, at least not in quantities that I believe will hurt me. So what I want to teach you today is how to just open your mind and recognize when there's a possible chemical exposure, and just start to be aware of what you're using. So in this presentation, what I did is I took out all the information that has to do with food, or most of it, because I realized that this group of people, you guys are already pretty aware of not eating processed foods. And so I don't need to stand up here and tell you what's in the processed foods. Okay, so what I'm gonna do is focus mostly on personal care products and cleaning products to a certain extent, but I'll explain later why cleaning products, it doesn't matter how much I talk about them. Okay, so the first thing you have to understand is risk, okay? So we're gonna play a game, okay? Because I love to play games because that's a good way of learning. So let's pretend today that I'm gonna give you a present, okay? And it's a pretty little present with little blue box and pink bow. And but what I'm telling you is you can choose which of these boxes you want, okay? And I'm gonna tell you what's in them. Okay, one of those boxes has $10 million in there. Actually, it's a check because, you know, you can't fit it all in there. The other one of those boxes, one other one, has a deadly bomb. And if you lift the lid, boom, you're dead. Okay, I know that's negative, but for illustration purposes, we have to do this. Okay, and the third box has tickets for you to enjoy a dinner for two at your favorite restaurant. So you get to pick whichever box you want, but I'm not gonna tell you which one's which. I'm gonna mix them all up, and you just pick your prize. Is there anybody willing to play that game? Nobody, right? Why? Too risky, right? Okay, well, what if I did this? What if I said there's still one box with $10 million, and there's still one box with a deadly bomb, and the other boxes all have dinner for two? Would anybody play? Not yet, still too risky, right? What if I did that? Now I've got 100 boxes. Sometimes I get some takers on that one, okay? But most of the people wanna see 1 million boxes, 10 million boxes, okay? Because we understand that likelihood has a lot to do with the risk, okay? So it's not the consequences that we're facing here, because we only have one box with $10 million and we have one box with a deadly bomb, and all the other boxes have dinner for two. So when we get up to, like, you know, 10,000 boxes, I'm going to say, you know, enjoy your dinner, because the likelihood is that you're going to get dinner. You're not going to pick one of the, either the really bad one or the really good one, okay? So what that illustrates is that risk is two things, okay? So we all look at risk and we say, well, you know, like, I'm afraid to fly because an airplane crash is really bad, you know, and I don't want to have an airplane crash, right? But we don't have a lot of people saying, oh, I don't want to drive because I don't want to have a car crash, because a car crash is really bad too. But, okay, it is so much more likely that you will have a car crash than you will have a plane crash. Okay, but we look at the consequences and we think, oh my gosh, that's so bad. But what we need to look at is, how likely is it that you will experience those consequences? And that's why I can make you feel better about this world of chemicals that we live in, because what we have to do is learn how to look at things in respect to you, what is most likely for you. And you know, half the people in this room are going to have a high likelihood for some chemical exposures, while the other half of the room will have a very low likelihood for those. But then there'll be other ones that half of the room will have high risk of chemicals. So that's what we're going to talk about. What is acceptable to you? Okay? So what I tell people is to look at the things you do every day, and let's address those risks. Okay? So what do you do? What kinds of things do we do every day? Some people swim every day. Some people clean houses every day. Some people don't. Some people eat brownies every day, okay? Or chew gum every day. I give this speech a lot. Usually my family is here with me. Hi, family. I know you're watching. Okay? So my wonderful husband of 33 years, just 2 days ago, we had an anniversary. 33 years, it's pretty good, huh? So he hears the speech all the time. And the last time I gave the speech, he said to me afterwards, he said, "What's in my gum?" Because he does chew gum every day. And what we did is we started to look at what's in his gum. And then we started looking out there, and I got to tell you right now, I don't have a brand that I can recommend. That's a sad thing for some people. So he has switched to mints that are marginally acceptable, but at least they're better than the gum he was chewing. And so that's something, we've been doing this for years, and suddenly there was another thing in our life that we had to address. Okay, so basically we start by making a list of the things we do every day, and then we look at those things, and we say, how bad is this? How hazardous is this for me? You know, and, you know, some you might find that you have a certain type of, water purification system, and maybe it's working for you because you live in a place that doesn't have very many water contaminants. And maybe somebody else can be using the exact same system and live in a completely different area, and so their risk is different based on what's going in. Okay? So, now I'm going to tell you about some everyday chemicals. Okay, because what I have to do, I know you guys are learning so much about how to detox the body, how to get things out of the body, how to address various diseases, all right? And as Artemis said earlier today, he said that as a practitioner, you can have the best method in the world. You can have so much that you're offering to your clients, but if they are not energetically in a place where they are ready, your efforts are going to be wasted. And so what I want to tell you, not to add something else to the list, but if your person is toxic and really toxic and they are still putting these chemicals in their bodies, then what you do for them is not going to work. That's why I was such a protege for Dr. Rita Marie, because once I started doing her program, I was already chemical free. I wasn't putting any more in my body. I needed her help to get them out. But the point is, until you stop putting the chemicals in, all your efforts to get to detox are just wasted, right? So that kind of explains why I was such a protege. Okay, so there's four ways that toxins enter the body. We call these routes of exposure. Okay, there's inhalation, where you can breathe the chemicals in. There's absorption, you can absorb it through your skin. There's ingestion, that's where you eat it. And then, of course, there's injection. Like when we give people vaccines, we inject chemicals into the body. And they let us. Okay, so I want to talk about all those routes of exposure, because the thing is that certain contaminants will prefer a certain route of exposure. You know, there are some things that you can, like mercury, for example, you can breathe mercury in, okay? It's not likely you're going to absorb it through your skin, okay? There is such a thing as mercury vapor, and under certain conditions you can absorb mercury through your skin, but some things have large molecules, and it's not necessarily bad to touch it as it is to breathe it, or maybe to swallow it, right? So we have to look at things according to, you know, what's the most likely way that you're going to be exposed, and also, you know, what the effects would be of that exposure. Okay, so we have a bunch of examples of airborne contaminants, because we always hear about indoor air quality, right? I tell people, your indoor air is probably more toxic than your outdoor air. Even if you, I mean, unless you live in a really polluted city and you happen to live right next door to some place that's generating exhaust gases all day long, or some other weird situation, in most cases, if you go outside, the air is cleaner than it is in your house. And lately, because we've had an energy crisis and we've learned so much about how to keep the heat and the coolness in our houses, we've tightened everything up. We've put insulation in, we've put in triple pane windows, we've done all these things to keep all the nice warm air in the winter and keep the cold air in the summer. And what we're also doing is we're keeping all those toxins in because they can't get out, right? Because the way to get rid of these toxins is to ventilate, okay? So what are some examples? We have carpet that off gasses, okay? If you need a recommendation, I'd say get all the carpet out of your house, okay? I have done that, and I can honestly say we all breathe much easier. Furniture can off-gas. Furniture and carpet can collect things that are natural, like dust mites and stuff. They can also collect things that you bring in the house on your shoes. So there's another free tip. Free, easy way to get rid of the chemicals in your house, or at least reduce them, is to not wear your shoes in the house. Take them off when you come in the door. Now, we have inside shoes and outside shoes, because I don't like to be without shoes, so I have to have my inside shoes, and we really pay attention. We have a certain spot in the house that we come in, and we bring those shoes in, and we put them there, and then we walk around the rest of the house with our either bare feet or our clean house shoes. So that's good. Cookware gives off toxic fumes, vapors, whatever you want to call them, and there's a bunch of other household items that will off-gas into your home. We all have heating systems, okay? Some of us have fireplaces, wood stoves, space heaters, things that have open flames, okay? They bring carbon monoxide into the house, okay? Sometimes our heater in the basement or wherever your heater is can be off-gassing also, can be leaking. You could have a flue gas leak or whatever, and you can bring these chemicals into the house by virtue of just burning the fuel that you use to heat the house. Okay, dry cleaning. I don't know how many people dry clean anymore, and we're seeing a lot of like organic dry cleaners popping up, and I recommend those. When I need to have something dry cleaned, I will take it to the organic dry cleaner, because that is one of the worst situations, okay? Dry cleaners, OSHA and EPA have specific rules for dry cleaners now, and there are proven statistics that if you live near a dry cleaner, like if you happen to be in a city and you live in an apartment and there's a dry cleaner on the ground floor, that the exposures are tremendous, okay? If you work in one, and it's perchloroethylene is what is used, and so when we say dry cleaning, like your clothes, they're not really dry. It's just that it means no water. They don't clean them with water. They soak them in these solvents, and then when you bring them home, they're full of those solvents, and they're giving that off. So when you bring dry cleaning home, the best thing to do is hang it out on your front porch or hang it in your garage or somewhere. And I'm saying for more than a day, you know, as long as possible, and let the air blow through it and let it air out, because when you bring that in and you close it up in your closet, every time you open that closet door, you're being exposed to chemicals that are absolutely carcinogenic. You know, I'm not talking about, you know, a tiny risk like it might give you a rash or it might make you itch or something. No, I am talking carcinogens, and that means cancer causing. I know you know that. So I just have to keep saying that. So don't bring dry cleaning into your house. If you do, air it out first. Candles and fragrances. This is my favorite one, okay? Because a fragrance, and I have a slide later, but I might as well talk about it now because I'm probably going to run out of time. A fragrance, by FDA definition, at least in this country, is an undisclosed mixture of chemicals. So they don't even have to tell you what is in the fragrance. And there can be anything. There can be solvents, there can be neurotoxins, there can be carcinogens. There's all kinds of things that can go into a fragrance. And most of the time they are just allergic reaction causing type chemicals, but there are some fragrances that can be considered carcinogenic or mutagenic or whatever you want to call it. And the reason is that the companies have to protect their trade secrets. You know, like a fragrance is a big deal, you know. If you have a signature fragrance, you don't want to let that out. So making them put that on the label is pretty much putting them out of business because it's telling all their competition what's in there. So you can understand why we have this particular definition of a fragrance, but you can also understand why it's hazardous for us because you don't know what it is. Okay, but candles, the reason I don't like candles is not because of the fragrance, although that is a problem, but a lot of people are now making soy-based candles and, you know, olive oil candles and all kinds of things that are naturally okay for you. You know, I've even seen organic candles, which is great, okay, if you're going to put the candle in your house and enjoy that it's an organic candle. But as soon as you light that thing on fire, it's toxic because smoke is toxic. So you can take spinach leaves, which are really, really healthy, and you can set them on fire and they're going to give off some toxic things, okay, combustion products. So that's why I don't like candles. Okay, cleaning products, I'm going to talk more in general, but cleaning products are full of various chemicals and they don't need to be labeled. That's the most important thing, at least not in this country. Not required to label cleaning products. Yes, we have a question.
Oh, okay. I work at a school where they think it's wonderful when the kids are going to take their exams, mm-hmm. you know, the little kids, that they plug in one of those Sensi's and it's wafting through the halls and I just cringe. Do you know what's in there? Because I was trying to figure out.
Bad things, okay?
Really bad.
Especially those scented oil things that you plug into the wall.
Yeah.
Lots of anything that is a fragrance that you spray in the room or whatever.
Uh-huh.
It's going to give them headaches. It's going to make them unable to focus. Now, a perfect alternative to that is diffusing essential oils, like Artemis is doing out there. And there are certain oils, like I find that peppermint oil, it improves my focus. It's unbelievable.
Yes.
And I did just send my son off to college, and he has straight A's. I'm so excited. He's in college. He's a freshman. And he uses peppermint oil. He inhales it, and it gives him the focus that he needs.
Would you know specifically as a chemical engineer that that contains like adaptogens or what
Well,
does
it contains volatile organic compounds, VOCs they call it, and most of them, okay? They also contain fragrance, which again, we don't know what's in there, okay? But the VOCs I know are neurotoxins. They affect your brain in various ways, kill brain cells. That's like the most generic way I can do it. You know, the best way to do, like I said, is to try an alternative like diffusing essential oils because that really will improve their concentration. Okay? Another thing that they do in schools that I hate, okay, is whenever there's a virus out there like the swine flu or whatever the issue of the month is, what they do is when the kids are going to lunch, as they walk into the cafeteria, they won't let them in the cafeteria until they squirt them with antibacterial hand stuff. And then they put that all over their hands. And then, of course, they touch their sandwiches or whatever they're eating. And so they're getting it in their skin. They're eating it. They're inhaling it. It's terrible. And I did have to go to battle with my son's school on that one. But the only solution I can think of is that if you have, preferably an essential oil or some other kind of antibacterial substance that, you know, because there's lots of things. Tea tree oil kills bacteria. You know, Artemis has Thieves out there, and Thieves is amazing for killing bacteria and viruses. And if you can send that in as a substitute, convince the school that if your child puts that on their hands before they go in, will they let them in for lunch? You know, because that's the only way to get around that, because anything that says antibacterial probably has triclosan in it, which I believe destroys our immune systems. And yeah, thyroid, that's okay, yes. So, oh man, maybe that's what happened to me. Okay, so how do you clean up the air? You ventilate and you filter, Okay, there's so many ways to do that. I'm not going to get into that. Just remember this. The solution to pollution is dilution. Okay, dilute the air. Don't keep it all in your house concentrated, okay? Because the more things that are off-gassing in your house, the less air circulation you have, the more concentrated they're going to get, okay? And that goes for things like, we haven't even talked about things like radon gas coming into your house. You know, you got to ventilate the house. That's the way to get it out. Okay, so there's water contaminants. I'm going to go over this one really quickly, but I need you to understand this because a lot of times your exposure may not be coming from the products you're using in the shower or the cleaning products you're using on your floor. It could be coming from the water you're using to mix with the chemicals that you're using. Okay, so chemicals get into the water. If you have public water, they get added by the chemical company. All right, I've worked in hundreds of chemical plants that are water treatment facilities, and I know why they have to treat the water. It's very important because the water, if we expect the water company to send us pure water to our house so that we just open up the faucet and out it comes, they have to do certain things, because if they just take water and pump it through, I don't know, 100-year-old pipes and through scum and scale and everything else that might be in there, the water's going to get to your house and it's going to have bacteria in it, and it's going to make you sick right away. Whereas if we treat it with chlorine, well, now we've got a lot of time, okay? Because chlorine's not going to kill you instantly. It's going to create all kinds of issues that may not even be traceable to your water. And then maybe, you know, 10, 15, 20 years down the road, you're going to have this fatal illness that's going to get you. But, you know, nobody's making that connection. Nobody. So, right, another thyroid. And that's, I do want to talk about chlorine. Chlorine in itself, like if you just, you know, are near chlorine, unless it's really high concentration gaseous chlorine, it's not something that's going to kill you immediately. And it will make symptoms to some people who are sensitive. But what chlorine does is two things. I know we have a group of smart people in here, so you all understand periodic chart, right? So think about the periodic chart and where chlorine is on the periodic chart. And it's called a halogen, right? And it is in line with, it's on the top, and then there's fluorine and bromine and iodine, right? And so iodine is similar to chlorine, and our thyroids really need iodine. And so if there's not enough iodine present, or even if there is enough present, but there's chlorine present, chlorine's stronger. So the chlorine's going to go to your thyroid before the iodine does. And that, I have seen pictures of, like, if you look on a map and you take like a nuclear plant, and nuclear plants give off iodine. Okay, they're allowed to put radioactive iodine into the air because it has a really short half-life. And there are pictures that show that the incidence of thyroid cancer in the direction of the wind, the prevailing wind direction, the incidence of thyroid cancer is tremendous near nuclear plants, because these people are getting radioactive iodine instead of the iodine that their thyroids need. And so if that is so scientifically proven that we can look at it on a map, what I'm wondering is, can we also make the same correlations with public water as opposed to private water? And I think the answer is going to be yes. We're just not making that connection. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And they have to put X number
of, you know,
chlorine
in, mm-hmm.
so that the person at the end of that line.
Yes.
The water is clean. Well, this person's going to get, you know, a tremendous amount.
Not so much.
And tested our water, and we are kind of right in the middle. But it was interesting because that.
Yeah. Right, and the other problem with that, what they do is they have to add extra chlorine. They call that chlorine residual. So, and they do that just because it's going to pick up bacteria in the pipe, okay? And yeah, it has to get to the last person and still be killing all the bacteria, which is important, okay? But the problem is that chlorine reacts with anything organic. So anything, and I don't mean like organic vegetables kind of thing. I just mean anything that's not inorganic. Like inorganic would be like metals and concrete, dirt, okay? But organic, our bodies are organic. okay? Anything carbon-based is organic. So it's going to pick up that stuff, and it's going to react with it, and it's going to cause, it forms these chemicals called trihalomethanes, THMs. And the water companies understand that. You know, there are EPA regs that require them to have this many THMs in there. But my problem with that is that when it leaves the water plant, it's in compliance, you know, and it doesn't have THMs, or it has a very small amount. But as it goes through the pipe, and then as it gets into your body, that excess chlorine is reacting with anything organic, and it's forming these THMs, which are carcinogenic. So that makes perfect explanation to me about, you know, why are the cancer rates going up so high? It's because it has a lot to do with chlorination of water. And so my solution to that is not to eliminate water treatment plants, because we can't all have our own well. My solution to that is that we all need to have water treatment systems in our homes. I think it should be part of the building codes. I think just like we have to have heating systems, you can't sell a house without a heating system. I think you should not be able to sell a house without a water treatment system that is proven to work in the area where the house is. I think that would be perfect. Maybe we should all own water treatment system companies. Okay, so anyway, chemicals added by the water company is a problem. Okay, chemicals that enter the water supply, things can, drainage, runoff. If you live in an industrial area, anything that runs off of the chemical plant, it's not collected, is going to go into the stormwater, it's going to go into the groundwater, and it can be transmitted back to you in the form of chemicals that may or may not be excessive for you. And here's something that I learned about water that just shocks the heck out of me, okay? Imagine this, okay? You got, where does the water come from? They take it out of the ground, or they take it out of the surface water somewhere. So the water company sucks all this water out of the ground, they put it through filtration, and they put it through pumps, and they send it out to your house, right? And then when the water comes out, it goes down your sewer, right, your drain, and it goes to the wastewater treatment plant. Okay, so whatever you put in your water before you flush it or send it down the drain goes to the wastewater treatment plant, and they filter it to a certain extent and put it back in the groundwater. Okay, so think of that cycle and think of the billions of gallons of water that cycle takes care of, right? Well, what they're finding in major cities, Philadelphia being one of them, I know some cities like San Francisco, I don't remember the exact list, but there were 7 cities that were found to contain detectable quantities of drugs, mostly antidepressants. Okay? Now, how's it get in there? How are the antidepressants getting into the water? Because we're peeing them out, and they're going into our sewer, and they're going all the way back to the groundwater, sucked up by the water treatment plant, and purified again, and sent to your house, and that's where they're finding them. Because the water companies are not set up to remove that. You know, those drugs and solvents, and, you know, there are some things that can be removed by the water treatment plant, but not a lot. And so that just, like, I just can't get my arms around the fact that that many drugs are being flushed down the toilets, that they can be picked up in treated water in a large city. That's something to really think about. Okay, so there's a bunch of other things that can get into the water, but I'm going to let you, that's why I made copies of slides, by the way. And that's important. I'm going to be skipping a lot of slides as we go on, because some of the things I know you can just read yourself. So I'm going to give you the background to understand why I have it there. But when we get to the specific chemicals, I want you to be able to, you know, understand for the sake of time that we're going to, you can read them. And if anybody has any questions, or if anybody didn't get a handout or would like an electronic copy of my slides, email me. And this is one link that I've got to tell you that's not in here. Donna@chemconscious.com. Just send me an email, tell me you were at Shine and you would like any of this information, or if you have questions that I don't have time to answer today, you can email me at Donna@chemconscious.com and I will get that an answer, I promise. Okay, so how do we clean up the water? Well, if you have a public water or you have a private well, there's different ways. There's plenty of water purification systems out there, which I am not going to get into, but because it's like a whole science. I could spend 3 days talking to you about them and still not be able to help you pick one. I want you to understand the difference between purification and filtration, though, okay? Because if you are looking for a water treatment system, okay, when the salesman comes knocking on your door and he says, I've got this great cotton filter here that's just going to really take everything out of your water, or maybe he says he's got a carbon filter that's going to clean up your water, okay? Filters are just that. They filter, and they depend on what they're made of. What they filter out depends on what they're made of, and it depends on how small the spaces are that you pass through the filter. So some molecules will just go right through filters, okay? Purification is different. Purification is usually the most common form is reverse osmosis or distillation, both of which have their merits, both of which will clean up the water and get more things out than a filter. Like a filter would be like a Brita filter. So my point is, anything's better than nothing. If you're drinking straight tap water or you're pulling water right out of your well and have not had it tested, then I suggest that you investigate that, okay? Get your water tested or go get a filter. The best thing to do is to get one of those purification systems. Purified is better, but filtration is better than nothing, okay? And then I always look on the bottled water too, which I don't like to drink, especially because of the plastic bottles, but if you're traveling and it's better to drink bottled water than to be dehydrated, definitely, okay? I learned that the hard way, okay? But look at the bottle and it will say purified water or it will say filtered water. And so pick the one that's purified. Even if it says purified municipal water, because that just means they get the water out of the treatment plant and then they purify it, and just as good as if you got it out of the treatment plant or out of your faucet and purified it. So purification's better, but filtration's better than nothing. Okay, and then I already talked about bottled water. Okay, so what is in our products? That's what I really want to talk to you about today is what is in the products that we are using every day. Okay, if you, what I have is a list outside of the table right as you walk out the door, and you can get on my email list. And if you get on that email list at chemconscious.com, just click on the little thing that says, I want this book, I think that's what it says, and you'll get my ebook, which outlines all the ways that you're exposed to hazardous chemicals in the first hour of every day. And when I wrote that book, I was up to like 150 or 160 hazardous chemicals. And since then, years later, that number is way bigger now, but I don't want to scare anybody. So that book will outline all the ways that you're exposed in the first hour. But I'm going to give you a couple of simple ones. First of all, the reason that the ingredients are in the products, and some of them are allowed to be in any quantity, is they have this thing called GRAS. Generally recognized as safe. Now that's an FDA thing, that's the United States, okay? But generally recognized as safe means that this product is safe and you can put this in anything and it's fine. So it can appear in food, it can be in cleaning products, it can be in personal care products, no regulation on it. One chemical that's on that list is propylene glycol, antifreeze, okay? Everybody thinks that's perfectly acceptable. And I'm not arguing whether it is or not, I just think we need to have a choice. I think we need to know when something's in there, and we need to evaluate it for ourselves and decide if that's good or not. Okay? There's toxins in cleaning products, and as I recommend it, there's no labeling requirement. So you don't have to label your cleaning product. Now, there are companies out there, like Seventh Generation, for example, is a chemical company that is proactive, and they make all kinds of cleaners, and they do label their products. Okay? But my point is, they don't have to. So are they really labeling their products with everything that's in there? And again, I don't want to say anything bad about Seventh Generation because I do use some of their products. But what goes through my head is, did they put everything on that list? Or did they only put a few things on that list? Did they leave anything out because they technically don't have to put it on there? So is it truth or is it marketing? Are they trying to say, okay, we label it so you know our products are safe, and maybe we do and maybe we don't. So that's what leads me to always want to make my own cleaning products, okay, or use things that I am positive don't have any chemicals in them. Okay, cleaning products are threats to our family pets, There are threats to our children, especially when we put like flea products on our pets, right? You put I cringe every time I see a dog swimming in the pool with a bunch of kids and they got a flea collar on, right? Now, all right, is the flea collar worse than the chlorine in the pool? I don't know, okay? But point is, it's another chemical being added to the mix that really we should keep children, pets, and ourselves away from any kind of flea products. Then there's incompatible mixtures. You know, there's things that should not be mixed with other things. Now, most people know that you shouldn't mix like bleach with ammonia, right? Because that we've learned the hard way that that's not a good mixture. But shouldn't we be more aware of that? And shouldn't it be such that we can mix anything we want and know that it's not going to react? You know, like essential oils. I mean, I keep, you know, touting the benefits of essential oils, but, you know, you can mix them together and nothing's going to happen to you. It's not going to be some crazy chemical reaction like if you mix chlorine and ammonia. Okay? And then there's a bunch of other hazards of personal care products out there that I'm probably not going to mention other than on this slide, and that is that some of them are flammable, some of them are corrosive, some of them are highly reactive, and there's a whole lot of reasons why cleaning products and personal care products are suspect in my mind. Okay, so how do you choose your products? First thing you have to do is you have to learn to understand labels. Okay, I'm going to help you with that a little bit today. You have to learn to recognize the dangerous ingredients because it's required to be on the label for personal care products, but it's not required to tell you what it does to you. So it just has to be on there. So we have to be our own detective. We have to learn to look up these things. And I'm going to help you figure out how to do that too. We need to research and purchase safe alternatives, or we need to consider making our own products. And I do a little bit of both, you know, because there's some things that are just too much trouble to make. So I'm going to go out and find a product that I can buy. And other things, it's so easy and so much better to make my own. And then the other thing we have to understand is the ways in which companies will deceive us by advertising. And again, not necessarily a bad thing. There are so many people out in the marketing world that's their job. Their job is to make you like the product. Most of the marketing people don't even know whether it's bad for you or not. They just know that this is a product and it's my job to sell it. And I'm going to do that the best I can, right? So there's nothing wrong with that. But that's how this happens. The deception happens because they got to sell you a product and they don't got to tell you what's in it, okay? So understanding labels. This is off the back of a Pantene something or other product. The important thing to remember about labels, and this is true for food and for personal care products, is that the ingredients are listed in decreasing order of weight. So you pick up anything, and you look at it, if the first ingredient is water, okay, there's more water in there than there is, let's say the last ingredient is fragrance. Definitely more water in there by weight than fragrance. So that helps you to at least understand how much of something is in there, okay? If it's less than 2%, they can be listed in any order, but sometimes they don't even have to list things that are less than 2%. Most things you don't have to list if it's in there in quantities of less than 2%, okay? And the FDA does not require cosmetics companies to conduct assessments on their product, okay? There are certain things that are considered safe that are allowed to be put in, but the product itself does not have to be tested through all kinds. Like we kind of think in our mind that this has to be thoroughly tested because it's on the market. That's not necessarily true. And the other thing that is never true about cleaning products, food, or personal care products is that you don't have to test the synergistic effect of more than one of them. And that's where we really get into a problem because, you know, things are approved. Let's say it's approved. There's a chemical in there and the recommended daily allowance or the time-weighted average, we like to say, is, you know, 10. Let's just not even use units. It's 10, right? So you make a product and you have less than 10 of this ingredient in there, right? All right, so you use the product as directed, you get less than 10 of this hazardous ingredient, therefore you're not going to get sick, you're going to be fine, right? Well, what if you use 10 products that day that have just under 10 of that chemical in it, right? Now you're getting way over the limit, and there's no way to know that, right? And the companies that are putting these products out, they're within their guidelines of what they're supposed to do. So there really is no control over how much you get, okay? There's some things that are not on the label and don't have to be. Things called processing aids, things that are used to help process. My favorite one of this is, although they do put mostly on there, magnesium stearate. That's a processing aid. It helps them move their equipment move faster and lubricates things, right? But they have to put that on the label because there's so much of it getting into the product. But most processing aids never show up, okay? Ingredients that are present in quantities less than 2% are optional in most cases. Then there's companies that put harmless markers. Now this is something that I still can't figure out. I don't even know what they put, but there could be a dye or some type of a substance that helps the company understand that it's their product. So they can identify their product and they can identify a knockoff. You know, so if, and they have to allow that because competition. It's fair trade. You know, if you're making a product and somebody's trying to copy your product, you should have a way to be able to tell that this is my product and this isn't, right? But think about that. I can't find out what's in there. Bye, sweethearts. So, you know, it's really hard to find out. And so that makes me want to steer away from products that are really competitive for that reason. Okay, and then herbicides and pesticides. We all know that anything made from corn, anything made from, rice and even soy and everything, those are fully full of pesticides, herbicides, whatever, and we don't have to put that on the label. Okay? Now, I kept this one up there because this is a deceptive advertising thing, but there is a question from the web.
Yes. Are these markers/dyes allowed in organic products too?
That is a very good question, and I believe, I want to say yes, but because it would make sense that they would be, but that's something I would have to look up. That's a very good question. Does anybody know? Yeah, because when I think about the requirements for getting certified under organic, I don't remember seeing that. So yeah, it's possible. You know, I found out from a guy that sells fire retardants that organic clothing can still have fire retardants. And I found that directly from, I found that from somebody I know who works with in a company who was speaking to a rep of organic clothing or something. And anyway, I was told that. Can't prove it, but, you know, that makes sense because the laws that make us put the fire retardants on there are probably stronger than the organic laws. So anyway, naturally misleading. I just want to use this as an example because this is the one that's used all the time. All natural, right? There is no FDA definition of all natural. You can write that on anything, right? Cyanide is natural, okay? Mold, bacteria, those are all natural, right? But yet they can put that on the label. And I couldn't find a personal care product to do, so I just left this slide in there. But you can see it says pasteurized, okay? But nothing is naturally pasteurized. It has high fructose corn syrup. That's not natural. But they could put it on there and they could still put it on the label and it's perfectly okay, perfectly in compliance. But that's very misleading to us because the pretty packages, especially when it comes to personal care products, they make these packages so pretty with the colors and the flowers. And, you know, you look at that and you're like, that's got to be good for me, you know, and I fall for it a lot. Another question from the web.
Natural flavors, is that?
Definitely not. Definitely not, and I could talk to you about that forever. Natural flavors, they're not natural, trust me. And if they are natural, they are not naturally processed, which is another problem. Okay, so some ingredients. Again, I warned you, I'm going to go through some of this quickly. The skin is the largest organ in the body. Okay, so if we're going to absorb stuff, that would be the way to do it. I tell people, never put anything on your skin that you are not willing to eat. And I am very serious about that. It does not have to taste good. right? That's not a criterion. You can make it a criterion if you want, but it doesn't have to taste good. But do not put it on your skin if you are not positive that it is safe to eat it, because you're absorbing through your skin. In some cases, some things are absorbed much faster and much more efficiently through your skin because it doesn't have to go through your digestive process. A lot of us have impaired digestive systems, so if we eat a poison, we might get lucky and not be able to digest it, or might not be able to break it down, right? But when you're putting it on through your skin, you're absorbing quickly, and you can tell some things are made, like the smoker's patch is made to be absorbed through the skin. It's much more effective that way than if you swallow whatever it is, the nicotine or whatever that's in there. So keep that in mind. Nothing on your skin that you are not willing to eat. Okay? I make one exception. Large molecule things. I told you some things won't be absorbed through the skin because they're big. Titanium dioxide and zinc oxide, which you usually find in sunscreens, are perfectly safe. You can't pull them in through your skin. They're too big. Okay? They work by reflecting the sun. And so they are effective ways to prevent overexposure from the sun. But that's the one exception I make that doesn't sound so good, and I wouldn't want to eat it, but it does work, and it's perfectly safe. Okay, here's a resource, ewg.org. I love this website, okay? You can look up anything. They have so many people that have done so much research, and you can look up products. Now some of the more, like the organic products and stuff, they're starting to get a lot more of those on there. But you can look up Pantene shampoo and the specific kind, and it'll tell you everything that's in there, and it'll tell you everything that those chemicals will do to you. Okay, so that's like my Bible. I always check Skin Deep database. We have a question.
I just wondered about the titanium dioxide and zinc oxide. When you're putting them on your face, are you breathing? I mean, obviously you're breathing in the fumes. Is that harmful?
If it was in a powder,
okay,
then that would be harmful.
Okay.
And the rule of thumb with dusts and powders, because I don't get into that in this presentation, but the rule of thumb is if you're in an environment where you can see a dust cloud, or you can sense that you are breathing into it, then it's too much.
Okay.
And it's even if it's organic dust, even if any dust, it's kind of like smoke. Dusts are harmful to the respiratory tract, whether or not they have poisons in them or not. Mm-hmm. But the titanium dioxide, that's why it's in a cream. So it's always like, if you have it in a powder, I would be wary of that. I would be careful. Good question. Okay, so I'm going to just, another question from the web.
What about nano zinc oxide?
The jury's out on that. The jury is out on that because, again, a nanoparticle is going to be absorbed through your skin. So I don't know. A very good question, and something I need to put on my list of things to research, as if that list isn't long enough, but very good question. So for that reason, that's the other thing. I go with a guilty till proven innocent theory, okay? So if I am not sure, I won't use it. I won't use it till I am sure, okay? And what I say at the end of the ebook that I told you could get for free, I use this rationale. I say that 20 years from now, if I am lying in a cancer hospital, I'm gonna look back on my life and I'm gonna regret some things, okay? But there's no chance that 20 years from now, if somebody was to prove that artificial sweeteners are okay for you, just let's assume that that can happen, then will I regret not eating them? I won't. I won't care, okay? So that's why I always say they're guilty till proven innocent, and I try to follow that philosophy at all times. Okay, keeping in mind, of course, that there are some priorities like dehydration. we have to make some exceptions. Okay, so parabens. These are, you know, hormone disruptors. There's a whole bunch of them. You need to recognize that word, okay? Butylparaben, ethylparaben, isobutylparaben, anything that says paraben, okay? These are hydrocarbons, okay? They are absorbed by the skin. They mimic estrogen in the body. There's male fertility problems. And here's the one that really convinces me is they find it in breast tumors. They find parabens in the breast tumors. And that's just a huge red flag. Okay, it can cause DNA damage and increase skin aging, which is just weird, okay? Why do we buy these face creams again? What? Okay, Fragrance. I already talked about that, so I'm not going to go through it, except to point out, okay, somewhere I have a clicker, yeah, to point out, look at this list of symptoms, okay, that fragrance cause. Now, most people, I don't want to say most people, because I'm not really like most people, but here's the case for me, okay, I may be unique. I used to love fragrances. I used to plug in scented oil things. I used to have candles. I just potpourri, anything I could get my hands on that made my house smell nice. I used to love it, okay? And then I decided I wasn't going to use fragrance anymore. So I went through a period of my life where my house had no smell, which I thought was good. No smell, that's important, okay? I got to the point, once I got those out of my system and I got used to no smell, I don't know how I ever liked them before. I'll go to the supermarket and walk down the laundry detergent aisle and I get an instant headache. Or, you know, if you have to walk through the drugstore, the Rite Aid or something, like you got to stay away from the cosmetics aisle completely because that stuff's all coming out through those plastic bottles and instantly bothers me. If I'm sitting in a waiting room and somebody walks in, they're full of perfume and I have to leave. It really, really bothers me. And that's an important sign because that's my warning mechanism. Right? And I'm using that. But point is, I didn't have that warning mechanism when I was using them all the time. I had developed a tolerance to them. And that doesn't mean they're any more harmful to me than, or any less harmful to me if I can't tell. Another question.
Are there any other names companies are using for parabens by changing the name?
You can look that up on the EWG because that's another thing that they give you. And you know, I gotta say, I don't have all these memorized because it's tough. But there are they can be called. There are other things that we call parabens in chemical plants. So there probably are other names. But that's another good piece of information on there because they tell you there's what it is and here's what it could be called. Okay. And another really good one to look up is, by the way, there's probably 20 or 30 different names for MSG. Just, I'm not doing food today, but that's one that springs to mind as well. Okay, I'm going to skip through a lot of these. These are fragrance ingredients, okay? But you can look through them on your handout, and I think I've got pretty much all of the issues there. I told you when I worked at Monsanto, I worked in the phthalate department. We made phthalates that went into plasticizers. I think even though my toxicity was documented to be below the, you know, recommended daily amounts, I still think that a lot of my toxicity problems came from that. Okay, lead. We don't think about lead, okay? But there's a lot of lead in cosmetics problems or cosmetics products. And the way I learned this, actually, I was working for New York City Department of Sanitation. I wasn't working again. I was walking around their plant. But I went to their incinerator, and that's one of the biggest problems to their workers is lead exposure. And I'm like, why? You know, it's a trash incinerator. What's the deal? Because in the incinerator, they put all the trash in, right? But the lead's not going to burn. So the residue that they have to shovel out afterwards is full of lead. It's concentrated. And so I had to speak to 200 of these sanitation workers, all men, telling them about all the hazards of lead exposure and all the reproductive issues that come from it. And, you know, it wasn't a fun speech to make because these people were being exposed to this every day. And I had to tell them that they really needed to protect themselves. So you got to think about it. Like we use cosmetics that have lead in them and we throw them in the trash can and then we forget about it. But there's so much more of an effect that down the line, there's plant workers that have to deal with this that we're using. So it's not just us that we need to protect, but it's everybody in the whole chain. Okay, aluminum chlorohydrate, that's another one. Okay, I worked in a plant that makes this. Seriously hazardous process for the employees. But aluminum chlorohydrate is in anything that is called antiperspirant. Okay, I won't get into detail, but there's something wrong with suppressing a natural body function, especially a body function that is designed to detoxify you. So if we make ourselves stop sweating, what consequences does that have? Okay, the other thing I want to tell you about this is if you listen to me and you say, okay, I am not going to use antiperspirant anymore, the day you stop, about a week, maybe two, you're going to feel like you're sweating like crazy. You're just going to, it's the body saying, oh my gosh, I can sweat again. This is great. Okay, but I want to tell you, it's not going to last. A week or two, and then you'll start to feel like, oh, okay, I'm normalizing again. I'm getting back to normal. So just in case you want to give up deodorant or antiperspirants. Okay, this one, I just want to point out that it increases the penetration of the skin by other chemicals. That's why they put this in. This particular chemical is put into face creams and things to help you absorb it better, right? But if you look at the list of ingredients that this accompanies, it's helping you absorb a lot of really bad things in certain products. Formaldehyde, known carcinogen, all right? There are certain, when I talk about carcinogens, there's known carcinogens, there's probable carcinogens, there's suspected carcinogens, okay? So there's all these different levels of carcinogens, and the ones that are known, like formaldehyde, is definitely, like OSHA has special rules for formaldehyde workers, benzene's another one, asbestos is another one. So the ones that we know are really bad, there are rules for the workers, but yet they can put things that give off formaldehyde in our products and don't have to do anything about it, you know, because formaldehyde won't be listed on the label. There's going to be, you know, phenoxyethanols are listed as a safer alternative for a preservative. But I think I have a slide that tells, yeah, these are all the ingredients that release formaldehyde, right? So, like, you know, you look at these ingredients and, you know, does it tell you that you're getting formaldehyde? And if you look up these ingredients, you're not going to find carcinogen. At least not on all of them. But the key point is that they give off formaldehyde, and that's what's never tested. And it can't be tested, because think about it, if you're the FDA and you have to make a rule, right? Well, how could you test all the different ways that we could use these things? You can't possibly. So it's not that I'm exposing a bad thing. It's not like a conspiracy or anything. It's just literally impossible to be able to test the safety of these things and all of the far-reaching consequences. There's a bunch of preservatives some of these are used in foods and in personal care products. Question from the web?
Nail polish and fake nails.
The biggest problem I have with fake nails is the glue. Definitely the glue. I mean, glues are, I ordered a sample of bamboo flooring one time, which doesn't have anything to do with nail polish, but I ordered it because I thought, I'm going to be environmental, you know? I'm going to put in bamboo flooring because bamboo is so sustainable. You can grow it anywhere. It grows like crazy, right? So instead of killing trees, we'll just use bamboo. So I get this box, and I'm like, oh, my samples are here, right? I open the box, and as soon as that flap came open, oh my gosh, the smell that came out of that box was unbelievable. And it was because bamboo is skinny, right? So they have to make thin strips and they have to lay it all down and glue it all together. And so there's so much glue in that flooring that even though it was environmentally safe, it wasn't very safe for me. Okay, and the same thing with fake nails. I mean, the fake nail itself isn't going to hurt you. Maybe the grinding that they do, the dust and stuff, might be a problem. But in general, you take something, you glue it on your finger, that something isn't going to hurt you, but the glue that you use will. And nail polish, yeah, neurotoxin, there's solvents. And then the nail polish remover is acetone, which is a solvent, which is hazardous and not to mention flammable. Sure. They are starting to create that. Yes, the question is, aren't there nail polishes and nail polish removals that do not have any hazardous ingredients? And the answer is, they're starting to come out. And that's what I love about all of this, is that, you know, back in 2009, when I first started making presentations like this, nobody wanted to hear me. Nobody cared to hear it. And I was kind of disillusioned and thought, well, maybe this is not the message that people want to hear. But now what I'm seeing, you know, I can go to the supermarket the day before a large snowstorm. You know how everything's missing on the shelves? It used to be that I could go to the supermarket and I could buy my organic eggs and walk back out and everybody else is standing around saying, why aren't there any eggs, right? But that has definitely turned around, and I can rarely get organic eggs the day before a snowstorm. So that's progress. And so there are a lot of companies that are responding, and this is how we fix this problem. That's the most important thing. I'm so glad you asked that, because this is how we fix it. The way we created this problem is we had demands. We said we want our hair to be fluffy, and we want our food to last longer in the refrigerator so that we don't have to go to the supermarket every day. And we want cakes that rise fast, and we want rice that cooks quick, and all these things that we want, right? But we didn't know to ask. We didn't know to say, I want these things to do this, and I want it to be safe. So I want to have my fluffy hair, and I want to be safe, right? So now we're starting to realize that, and we're starting to demand that. And what's going to happen, you know, it's not a matter of like destroying jobs or taking products off the shelf or putting companies out of business, because that's not what's happening. What's happening is these companies are just making different products. And they're listening to our requests, and they're changing their products. And you know why? Because they can't sell it. Like, if we stop buying what they're making, they will make what we want. And those workers in the plant, they're not going to lose their jobs. They're going to still work there, and they're just going to be making a product that's safer. So overall, everybody wins, right? So very important. So now I'm going to go through, you can read these because I can't have time to go through all these. Although here's one, retinal palmitate. It's a vitamin A sort of substance. It's bad when it's exposed to the sun. So when they put it in sunscreens, it creates a hazardous condition. But if you put it in your night cream and put it on you, it's probably not, at least right now, I have not found any reason to believe that it will hurt you. SLS, this is a famous advertising ploy, because everybody kind of knows that SLS is bad now, right? So now you can go out and buy all kinds of shampoos that say, no SLS. So you want to grab it off the shelf and say, great, it doesn't have SLS, but it's got something else. You know, and you look at those ingredients and there's a whole bunch of other things in there, but that's a really good way to get people to buy stuff, is to just tell you what's not in there. Okay, I'm going to go past this one. I'm going to let you read those. They're all very interesting though, aren't they? Okay, there's a whole bunch of other ingredients that I just want you to start being aware of what's in there. Triethanolamine, we made that in a plant I used to work in too. And the interesting thing about that is that we used to have this thing called blue haze, where we had triethanolamine and we had HCl, right? HCl hydrochloric acid. And if the two of them got out of the pipes at the same time, it made this haze, this blue haze all over the place, which we never really, I mean, I don't know that we ever determined that it was hazardous for us or anything, but it makes me wonder, because we have HCl in our bodies, right? It's in our stomach. Like, what happens if we eat something that's got TEA and we make blue haze in our stomach, and is that bad? You know, just you answer some questions and you just generate 100 more, don't you? Okay, so cleaning products. Not required to be labeled. I already made that one clear. Responsible companies will voluntarily disclose, and again, that's a good thing. We're moving in the right direction, but there's nothing governing them as to whether or not they list everything. Okay? We're making major progress, again, with EWG. They just came out with this database of cleaning products, and you can look up your cleaning product by brand, and they'll tell you what's in there, and it is shocking. It is absolutely shocking what is in there. So I'm going to just leave that as a homework for you guys. Okay, so what I say with cleaning products is that in the absence of labeling, if you must buy a cleaning product, buy one that doesn't have warnings on it. Because even though they're not required to label it, they are required to put the warnings on there. So if it tells you, you know, do not inhale, do not use in combination with this or that, you know, keep away from open flame. Those warnings are there for a reason, and those give you clues. And I like to say, don't buy a product that has any warnings on it, especially not do not ingest, because we know that if we're using a cleaning product, it's getting on our skin, and that's just as good as eating it, right? Okay, so I already talked about chlorine, so I won't go into that because that's the same thing I said. We mentioned triclosan. That is an antibacterial. It's a hormone disruptor, liver toxicity, antibiotic resistance, interferes with the probiotic environment. We could go on and on about triclosan. Insect repellent. The only thing I'm going to say about insect repellent is insects are live. They're live, right? And we are alive. I'm not going to say anymore, okay? Okay, synthetic dyes. Again, you know, if it's synthetic, it's going to have chemicals. It's hard to say what's in there. Different chemicals, different dyes have different things in them. This is a slide that shows you what some things do, like red dye number 3 is linked with thyroid damage. I think that's illegal now to use that. Red 4 is linked to kidney and bladder. So again, it depends on the dye. But I don't know of any dyes, synthetic dyes, that are actually have no warnings. So very important to stay away from dyes. Okay, and here are your resources. Okay, EWG.org, very, very good resource. EPA.gov, again, it's the Environmental Protection Agency website, but there's a lot of information. There's information about mercury and lead and radon, which I haven't even touched on a lot of those, but there's a lot of information out there. And so it is a good website. You just got to kind of get past some of the propaganda, I guess. Okay, and then the CDC website. All right, the CDC website itself, and I'm doing great too with time. The CDC website itself, I'm not too crazy about, but the NIOSH one, the National Institute for Occupational Safety and Health, that's always been my Bible. They send you free things. You can call them up, or you can go on the website and you can get booklets about chlorine and water treatment and about all kinds of things. Fluoride, it's another one I haven't touched on, but fluoride is a big issue. And you could get all that information from NIOSH, and they give it out for free. And it's designed to protect workers, but it's definitely applicable to the general public. Okay, so that's the end of my presentation, but I do want to tell you about something. Okay, so everybody that has my handouts, there's a green sheet of paper on the back. And I'm really excited about that because this is my first product. I haven't had any products. I just go and speak, and I do consulting. I do one-on-one, but I've never really had a product that I sell. And so what I created is a checklist. It's a checklist that's going to take you through your whole life. It's called Detoxify Your Life. And the checklist, I'm getting it on the website, let's cross our fingers, this week, okay? So if you go to the website right now, you won't find it, but I'm offering a special because I'm normally going to sell that for $19.99, and that is $19.99. We're not talking hundreds here. And because I love Rita Marie and she's my best buddy, I am offering at her Shine Conference that you can have that for half price. So $9.99 if you buy it today. And if you are on the web, I will have a list of people who have come to this conference or who are on the web, and I will email you a special code so that when this goes up on my website, you can put in the code and you would receive the special pricing for Shine. Okay? And there's going to be a deadline, though, for that, because what I want to do is everybody that purchases that, I want to get you all on a group phone call and go through that checklist and help you complete it and fill it out. And then if you have a special situation, like you know that you've got a problem, you know, maybe you're dealing with an autistic child or a senior citizen living in your house and you really want to go in depth and look at things, I offer 1-hour consultations also, which is an option on that form. So if you want to purchase it today, fill it out, give me the form. I do have the capability to take credit cards, but I got to do it through my phone, and you know, we don't have a lot of time. So it's probably best if you fill it out and give it to me, or again, email it to Donna@chemconscious.com.
Thank you.
Yeah, it just.